This tape is a production of All Roads Ministry. This speaker is Vin Lewis, founder and president of All Roads Ministry. This is essentially a recording of a live call-in radio talk show, which was recorded in August of 1994 in Erie, Pennsylvania. I think the subject matter and the content are self-explanatory. I hope you enjoyed listening to it. Thank you very much. And may God bless you for obtaining it.
With Pat Campbell.
Good morning, Erie, and welcome back to the Voice of Choice flagship 1330. Thank you once again for joining us for this a Thursday edition of The Right Way. Day 255 of the continuing real adventure in broadcasting into our 37th week at our new dial location, 1330 AM, 5,000 watts strong, broadcasting to four counties, three states, two countries. I am joined this morning by phone by a guest who has been on the program in the past. Earlier today I said he is the most controversial guest I've ever had on the program, more controversial than Linda Thompson and Tex Mars combined. This gentleman created quite a stir last time when he was on the program. He managed to alienate about half of my listening audience in the first 20 minutes when he proclaimed that women are morally inferior to men. Vin Lewis is known as a conservative, orthodox, some say militant Catholic. After his last appearance, we have two new descriptive adjectives. One caller referred to him as a Shiite Catholic. Another said this man is a true example of a zealot. He is the publisher of a monthly publication. He doesn't like to call it a newsletter or a magazine. He refers to it as your textbook in monthly installments. He is the publisher of that publication called Armament, and also the head of All Roads Ministry, which goes by the acronym ARM, A-R-M. Vin, once again, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, Pat. Just let me say one thing. I didn't proclaim that women were inferior to men. I testified to it. Proclaim seems as if I was saying it on my own authority. It was the authority of God, and I was simply bearing witness to it.
A minor
quibble, but maybe one that'll save me a few days in purgatory.
I had a hunch you would pick up on that right away.
Okay.
Did you enjoy the term Shiite Catholic?
Sure, I'll take it. I'll take anything. I was once called the Morton Downey Jr. and the G. Gordon Liddy of the Catholic Church, and I find those also complimentary.
There you go. Let's kick things off this morning. In the first half hour or so, I just want to have a discussion between the two of us. Later on, I'll open up the phone lines, because there's many questions I wanted to ask you over the air and have you respond to that I simply didn't get the chance to do last time. Number one question, and you know what it is. What is it?
About purgatory?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Now, last time you were on the program, I kept bringing up the fact that we wanted to get to the topic of purgatory. We never did. In this latest issue of Armament, you have an excellent little story in there about a gentleman that phoned your TV program, correct, from Texas?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm usually ahead on the Armament, so I don't know what is in the last issue that went back out.
I'm looking at the July issue here.
Okay.
You had a gentleman that phoned your TV program and asked about purgatory. He was not a Catholic himself. And you issued a little challenge to him. Can you share that with the listeners?
Yeah, well, I always issue the same challenge, so I guess this is the one you refer to. If you can show me where there's, put me in a position where I'm not able to establish a Catholic doctrine by the Bible alone, I'll leave the Catholic Church formally at this time right there.
Mm-hmm.
But I also point out that purgatory is one of those doctrines which everybody believes, and this is the easiest way to, shall I say, attack in quote-unquote, or shall we say refute or admonish or even teach and instruct the non-Catholic. All non-Catholics believe in purgatory. Certainly all Protestants do, but they all deny it, and this brings up a value conflict. If they're advocating, if they believe something and the system they follow and give their loyalty to formally rejects it, then they can't call themselves honest people and they can't call themselves Christians.
Let me play the role of the inquiring mind here. I'm sure there are many non-Catholics out there who would say, show me in the Bible where purgatory is.
Yeah. Well, you want what you want. I'll give you one verse.
All right.
Not one verse, one quick story. Passage, parable. Jesus in Matthew 18, chapter 18 of the Gospel of St. Matthew, has the story which we Catholics call the merciless official.
Mm-hmm.
Briefly, what happens is this. A man is owed a king a great deal of money, a huge amount, and the king asks for the money back, and the official says, be patient with me and I will pay you all. And the king says, well, all right, never mind. I forgive you that debt. Then this guy goes out and finds another official who owes him a very small amount of money, a truly insignificant amount, and he says to that fellow, hey, pay me. And the guy who owes the small amount says, exact same words, be patient with me and I will pay you all. And he says, no deal. And what he does is he has this guy thrown into prison, and he says, and you're going to be in prison, and I'm going to sell your wife and children to slavery, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, until you pay me everything. Well, now, people see this and go and tell the king, and the king brings the guy in, and he says, now, listen, I showed you mercy, but you did not show others mercy. Therefore, I shall put you in prison until you pay everything you own. And then the moral of the story, if we can use that expression, Jesus says, you know, verily, verily, or amen, amen, I say unto you, unless you forgive others from your heart, you will not be forgiven. Well, the point is, there's about six references to purgatory there, but the most significant one is this, and I always ask this with Protestants, does the king represent God? Well, of course he does, because Jesus says, my Father in heaven will treat you exactly the same way. Okay, no problem. Why is the man who owed, past tense, a great deal of money being put into prison? Why is he turned over to the torturers? Notice, he's already been forgiven his debt. But now he won't get out until he pays everything he owes. These are the words of Jesus. Now, that means, has to mean, must mean, absolutely without qualification, does mean that even after you're forgiven, there's something else left over. Called temporal punishment, Catholic doctrine, Jesus doctrine, Bible doctrine. The temporal punishment is the punishment due to sins already forgiven but not yet expiated fully by good works while on earth. And it also says things like, I'm going to sell your wife and children into slavery to pay for part of your debt, which means other people can pay for part of your debt. Notice also, you shall not be forgiven unless you forgive others. Well, then now, how would the non-Catholic handle this? If he argues that you're saved by faith alone, and they sometimes argue that,
right,
and if they argue that they're predestined to go to heaven no matter what they do, and they sometimes argue that, then how does this come up with? Well, you haven't got your sin forgiven by the time you die, but you can't get into heaven, but their system says you can get into heaven, but you can't get in until you have that sin forgiven. So what happens is, somewhere after death and before entering into heaven, your sin is forgiven.
Now, there are many Christians out there who simply believe, or claim to believe, in heaven and hell as the two ultimate spots that you can wind up in.
Utter nonsense.
Well, for those who don't know, though, and there's bound to be lots of people out in the listening audience that are not real clear on the idea, the concept of purgatory, could you define it? Could you explain it?
Sure. Purgatory, you could think of it as two ways. One is a location, the other is a process. It's either a place or a process, a status, a state, a procedure, by which those who are qualified for heaven, having made so-called the passing grade after death, but not yet purified enough to be able to be in the presence of God without offense to God, undergo a procedure by which they are purified, by which their sins are forgiven and removed, and to use a very, very simple analogy, which I learned in grammar school and I still think is a pretty good one. When you get a brand new shirt and you spill something on it and you wash it, you get almost all of the stain out. If you spill something on it again, next time around you get almost all of the stain out. After a while it gets really bad. Now, and after a while, it's no longer new, and you can see where it's no longer new. It's still white, but you can see remnants of the stain.
Okay. So purgatory is a place to be purged, to be cleansed of your sins.
And temporal punishment. Now, two things. One,
now,
of course,
explain what temporal punishment
is. Okay, there's two.
Many
there's,
people
right,
simply don't know.
Right. The Bible teaches that there are two sins, a sin which leads unto death and a sin which does not lead unto death. We Catholics call them very simply, sort of in Latin terms, mortal sin, venial sin. Mortal sin, of course, a sin which leads unto death, that is damnation. a venial sin, that sin which does not lead unto damnation.
Now, what is necessary for a sin to be considered mortal?
Mortal sin, classic Catholic theology, and I don't mean to say it's wrong, but I just want to make clear sometimes when I'm expressing my insights as opposed to simply parroting the church line. Nothing wrong with that, but I just want to make it clear, is that there has to be three elements for sin to be mortal. Number one, a serious subject or serious issue, a grievous offense against God, or you think it's a grievous offense against God, you must do it with full consent, and you must understand, you must have knowledge that it is a serious matter.
Vin, could you give me some examples of what might be considered mortal sin?
Oh, an abortion is a clear one. Adultery would be a clear one. Again, now that, in a sense, what I'm saying is that these are serious issues. Blasphemy, of course, lack of belief, attacks on the divinity of Jesus, the denial of the Trinity, attacks on the Blessed Mother. These are all serious matters, and if done with, shall I say it a different way, a complete heart and a clear conscience, they will definitely put you in hell, if not forgiven, before final judgment.
How does one gain forgiveness before final judgment? Must it be through a priest?
There are, again, classic Catholic theology says that a mortal sin, and that's what we're dealing with now, not venial sins, mortal sins, may be forgiven by one, they're of course forgiven by God, and I'm glad you put it correctly, through a priest. And we have to be very careful. It's not by a priest, it's through a priest. It is the priest who, in the confessional, or of course, whenever the sacrament of confession is administered, it doesn't have to take place in the confession, it could take place on a battlefield or in a sinking ship. He gives absolution. Then, if you have met the conditions necessary for forgiveness, namely, you have confessed your sin honestly, you have not withheld information which is related to it, and you have firmly resolved not to repeat the sin, you're truly sorry, it will be forgiven. There is also what is called perfect contrition, which means that you are a sorrow, you express sorrow and feel sorrow for the sin, not because of the penalties involved, not because of the fact you may be going to hell as a result of it or suffer the pains in purgatory, but because it is an offense against God. And classic Catholic theology says this also will remove a sin. Also, of course, baptism, sacramental baptism, true sacramental baptism, will remove all sins. And I'm not sure, I had to be a little careful on this, I'm not sure exactly where martyrdom comes in, but I know martyrdom will remove venial sins and temporal punishment and get you directly to heaven if you're qualified otherwise.
Now, by the same token, what is a venial sin? And can you give us some examples?
Very simple analogy is the, or a simple way to explain it, whatever is not mortal but is wrong. So, example, sometimes this can get a little, shall I say, Jesuitical when you're trying to figure out in the case of stealing. Obviously, if Christmas time comes and a poor man is going into a store to buy gifts for his family and you knock him down and steal all the money he has, that's a mortal sin, even if he's only got $20.
Right.
By the same token, if you broke into Donald Trump's house and stole an ashtray that was worth 39 cents, that's a venial sin. Because now, at what point does the amount of money be make it from venial to mortal? I really don't know.
No. Let me ask you this. I've had an ongoing dispute with an afternoon talk show host here at the station, Barry Grossman. I'm often criticized for believing in moral absolutes. This is the way I was brought up. I see things very clearly, black and white. I do not see the gray area that so many of our liberal friends do. For example, in my mind, stealing is always wrong, whether it's $1 million or one penny, okay? And you pointed out the difference between the mortal and the venial there as well. Adultery is always wrong, whether it's committed once or 100 times. My counterpart in the afternoon, Barry Grossman, doesn't feel that way. Apparently, he feels that there are times when stealing is sort of okay, depending on what you're stealing for. And by the same token, I guess adultery would be all right under certain circumstances. How do you respond to people that say my type of thinking, believing in moral absolutes, and that has always been my understanding that that is what the Catholic Church stands for, moral absolutes. They criticize it for being a narrow-minded, simplistic. What is your response?
Well, one of the things I try to teach people through my organization is certain techniques, or are certain techniques, which can be used in all cases to defend what is right. One of the things you do in a case like this to respond is you abstract. You don't respond directly to the attack. You abstract the attack. So what, simplify as much as you can and abstract what he is saying. What he is saying is to hold certain positions absolutely is true is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
What is he saying? It is absolutely true that you should not hold certain positions. Therefore, he contradicts himself and cannot be true.
What
you've done is, you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, I'm following.
You abstract it, and what you, again, I had an argument. A friend of mine, an ex-Catholic, took me out on sort of a fishing trip recently, and he got drunk and got nasty and started attacking the church, and one of his statements was, I think everybody should mind their own blank, blank business.
Right, right.
And the church should mind its own blank, blank, but everybody should mind their own business. Mm-hmm. But what is he saying? I'm telling everybody else what they should do.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, he's violating his own principle.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when I pointed out to him that he's saying everybody should do the absolute opposite of what he's saying everybody should do, he cannot be taken serious. Of course, he was drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then we have a situation where any statement which contradicts itself on its surface, or any system which does that, cannot be taken seriously. Either we're dealing with people, in the true sense of the word, whose mind is clouded by sin,
mm-hmm.
in which case they're certainly guilty and sinful, or we're dealing with people who, as much as they can be, are evil. They are consciously advocating evil systems.
Hmm.
The very simple thing I would always say to someone like that is, if you want to, now I've done a deductive, abstract approach. Want to make it individual? The guy's got a daughter, say, then I guess under certain circumstances it'd be all right if I crept through your window some night and raped your daughter, wouldn't it? And it'd be all right for you to have sex with your mother under certain circumstances. I mean, if you were on a desert island and you couldn't control your urges, it'd be all right for you to have sex with your mother. They get shocked and say, wait a minute. But this is a Jesus technique. Because if you notice, outside of the fact that Jesus ultimately was lynched by the mob, the state, and the church of his time,
right.
They tried to get him a bunch of other times because he said shocking things and directly attacked the heart of the person.
Mm-hmm. Vin, let's pause on that note. I've got to get a few commercials in here. And we'll be back with more from Vin Lewis right after this.
Sportsline with Pat Campbell.
Welcome back, folks. Thanks for joining us for this, a Thursday edition of The Right Way, day 255 of the continuing Real Adventure in Broadcasting. My guest joining me this morning until 11:30, Vin Lewis. He is the publisher of a monthly publication known as Armament, and he is also the president of All Roads Ministry, which goes by the acronym of ARM. He is oftentimes billed as an orthodox, conservative, militant Catholic, and he likes to think of himself as the Catholic who can defend any Catholic position from the Bible. Vin, I want you to respond to another thing that we've seen in recent years. I call it the golden rule of the flower children. It's not do unto others as you would have them do unto you, but the modern-day philosophy of anything is okay as long as it doesn't hurt somebody else.
Yeah. Well, recently, I think it was about a year ago now, I was on the Sally Jesse Raphael show. I'm on that show occasionally as sort of a house Catholic.
You have my sympathy.
They're actually very pleasant people. I have to say that. The producers really treat you well and all that stuff. But the point was, one of the shows was homosexuals who had been married or thought of getting married, and they were on the show. And when they did their
same-sex partners?
No, with two women.
All right.
Men, male homosexuals married to women. And when it was finished, or when they got to me, I said, this is exactly the point which refutes this whole concept that there's no such thing as a sin without social consequences. The whole argument of the homosexuals is, leave me alone. I'm not harming you. Why are you picking on me? But the point was, there were women out there crying. There were families torn apart. There were children who no longer had their fathers. There were women who couldn't accept the reality that these men had walked out on them simply because they had chosen a sinful lifestyle. But if you also follow that, it's all right as long as anybody wants it, then what follows from that automatically is then you cannot get angry at the skinhead who runs around and bops the black guy on the head or beats up the homosexual or the homeless fellow because he's just doing what he wants to do. And, of course, no one will ever say this. They'll say, well, of course, it doesn't hurt, you know, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else. And then, of course, what does hurt mean? Say, very simply, one can certainly see physical pain, but what about emotional pain? What about psychological pain? It's led to all this stuff about feminism and sexual harassment and stuff like that. And I'm not saying that feminism, of course, is idiotic. But in a certain sense, the sexual harassment cases have some validity. Men should treat women as if they are ladies.
Mm-hmm.
And now we wind up with these incredibly, sometimes incredibly stupid lawsuits where, just as an example, a guy collected a lot of money because he doesn't like blacks and can't work them in the post office, so now he's disabled, see? By not restricting what pain and evil and damage is by an absolute, rigid, inflexible standard from God to man,
mm-hmm.
you, excuse me, you now open up the entire concept of what's pain, what's damage, what's right, what's wrong, what's justice, and these absolutes, quote unquote, vary from time to time, place to place, and fashion to fashion. And what this does is it makes us complete slaves to style, which is the most important factor in all of human history.
Let me ask you to respond to something that's been in the news recently, and I've been very critical of the recent move by the Catholic bishops, where they came out in force and made a joint statement on abortion with regards to the Clinton health care proposal. I contend that this is too little, too late. For years, many insurance companies, not all, but some out there, have been carrying abortion as part of a benefits package. Why didn't we hear from the bishops in the past?
Well, I can only speculate, but I can speculate on what I believe is some valid inside information. I know a man, and I don't have permission to give his name, so I won't. But he worked for a number of bishops. I trust him as being an honest person, and in this I think his knowledge is correct. And what he said was, when asked this question quite a while ago, he said that although we, the average Catholic who goes to Mass, can't understand this, the bishops in this country are literally terrified of losing their tax-exempt status if they say anything political whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And they define political as speaking out against abortion, or speaking out against pornography, or speaking out against prostitution, or speaking out against anything. They're terrified. Now, he said, I know you people are laughing and you think this is ridiculous, but they function that way, which, of course, goes back to the concept of they probably have lost their faith. They don't realize they're in a divine institution with God on their side,
mm-hmm.
and then they're working purely from the concept of that we're a human institution. We're a political institution. We have to play the political games. We have to deal with the power the way it is, and therefore we have to, you know, make a pinprick here and a strategic retreat here and a suggestion there, but don't push too hard. It's sort of Henry Kissinger's The Real Politique. Deal with things the way they are. Don't let the principles get in their way. They're very nice as a guideline, but for heaven's sakes, deal with the world the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've become, in my opinion, are secularized, completely secularized. And most Catholics that I know who, whenever they talk about this issue, say the same thing. It would be much better if the Catholic Church lost its tax-exempt status,
mm-hmm.
by far. It would be much better if we were more poor, with more dedicated people, who are giving money not because they could write it off on their income tax at all, or not because it gets them an award dinner in New York City or something like that, but because they are truly trying to serve Jesus and bring honor to God and win the world for Christ one soul at a time.
Vin, let's pause on that note. We're going to be going to the ABC News here at the top of the hour. In the 10 o'clock hour, I will open the phone lines at 835-1330 if you have a question for Vin Lewis. When we come back, I want to discuss a number of things with Vin, including what he considers to be blasphemies like altar girls, female lectors, Eucharistic ministers, communion in the hand. I want to talk about Judgment Day, what actually happens when you die, what we can expect on the other side. Also, he has some unique criticisms concerning Rush Limbaugh, Pat Buchanan, and nationally syndicated columnist Joseph Sobran, as well as some enlightening thoughts regarding the U.S. Constitution. We'll be back with more from Vin Lewis after this.
Serving four counties, three states, two countries, and you. You're listening to 5,000 watts of great talk radio, flagship 1330 WFLP.
Welcome back, folks. Thanks for joining us for hour number two of this, a Thursday edition of The Right Way. Day 255 of The Real Adventure in Broadcasting, well into our 37th week at our new dial location. Joining me by phone this morning until 11:30, a gentleman by the name of Vin Lewis, who has been on the program in the past. He is the publisher of a monthly textbook that you receive in installments called The Armament. He's also head of All Roads Ministry. He oftentimes bills himself as the Catholic who can defend any Catholic position from the Bible, and we openly encourage your participation this morning. You get involved by picking up that phone and dialing 835-1330, 835-1330. Cellular One users, star 1330, and fax is coming to us at 835-8395. Then one of the things I wanted to kick off this hour with was a question I sat down and asked my grandfather, who happens to be 90-plus years old the other day, and it's a question that all of us is going to have to answer sooner or later, and that is, what happens when you die? For example, if you're fortunate enough to go before the pearly gates, what do they ask you? Do they ask you for a church membership? Do they ask you, did you ever smoke? Did you ever drink? Did you ever swear? How are you judged?
Okay, one thing, Pat, please give me let me get a formality out of the way. Thanks for having me on again. I forgot to mention it, okay?
Always welcome.
Now, one of the things I find universal in all forms of Christianity, and using that word as broadly as possible, is that everybody agrees that an account will be rendered of your life, and essentially I think we get the prefigurement of this in that old cliche about when a person is dying, gee, my whole life flashed in front of my eyes.
Right.
You will be shown your whole life, and at that time, you will be shown the good things you did and the bad things you did, and unfortunately, I think for all of us, the bad things will outweigh the good. This will induce in us a sorrow, a misery, a sense of shame, and in my opinion, at that point, you will either quite literally throw yourself in hell out of understanding of the just status you've brought about. I deserve to be condemned. I deserve to be damned. You will go. Or you will say, thank you very much, Lord, but I'm not ready to go yet, and you will go into purgatory voluntarily to stay there until you are purged.
Mm-hmm.
Or for very, very few, they will go directly into heaven, and I think most of those will probably say, no, I'm not really worthy of it. There's very interesting biblical principles about, and it says it several times, you cannot see the face of God and live. And the experience that people have even with the angels in the Bible is this one of fear. And fear the Lord is the beginning of all wisdom. And it says in Hebrews, it is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of a living God. I think the primary concept is going to be shame and fear.
Mm-hmm.
And just to use again that quick analogy of purgatory, if you're on your way to a wedding, all dressed up, and the car breaks down on the way, and you have to get in, underneath the hood, and you get all greasy and sweaty and all of this, the first thing you're going to do when you hit that reception hall is get into the bathroom and wash up.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to go up and greet the bride. Even if the bride would say, oh, come on, Tom, that's all right. You're my brother. You're my favorite cousin. Come on. You'll say, no, let me wash up first. Now, magnify that about 50 million times, and what you have is the situation where we voluntarily will put ourselves out. Again, to go back to the biblical position of purgatory, and again, there's a passage, I think it's about Matthew 22:23 of the wedding feast, which is really a last judgment. The king, again representing God, sends out invitations. People reject it. He destroys them. Then he goes out and gets other groups from the highways and byways and bring them in. And when they're about ready to sit down to eat, he finds one guy who isn't dressed correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, why aren't you dressed correctly? And the guy gives no answer. Very interesting point. But the king calls him friend. He's already been invited. He's already accepted. He just hasn't started to eat yet. And they say, tie him up, throw him outside with his weeping and gnashing of teeth in the darkness. You don't tie someone up unless you're going to untie them. If you're going to kill him, you would have killed him like you did immediately.
Mm-hmm.
This fellow is in the purgatory situation, and notice he gives no answer. He gives no answer because when God says to us, why did you let me down here? Why did you let me down there? We're going to give no answer because there isn't going to be any answer.
Mm-hmm.
And so my view is that, to summarize it, I guess, we put ourselves in hell. We put ourselves in purgatory. God puts us in heaven.
Vin, let me ask you something. And
sure.
In fact, I brought this up with the listener the other
day. By the way,
day.
Pat, if you think I'm not responsive, please let me know.
Oh, no. I'm thoroughly enjoying the conversation
okay.
So far. We, of course, know about the American Holocaust that has continued since the decision Roe versus Wade, 30 million babies plus. I talked the other day on my program about the skewed priorities in this country. I was looking at a copy of USA Today, and two of the biggest stories were, number one, about the abortion doctor, the second one who's been shot, and the fact that three convicted criminals were going to be executed in the state of Arkansas. And I'm thinking to myself, the nation is concerned about these five particular individuals, Yet at the same time, most people are completely blind to the fact that 30 million innocent children have been slaughtered in their mother's wombs in the last 20-plus years. On Judgment Day, in your opinion, or based on biblical references, are we going to be held accountable for those deaths, the American Holocaust? Are we going to be held accountable for our lack of action or apathy?
We've got to be careful about that word we, because in English, we're not exactly sure who we're referring to. I've been active in certain, I call it anti-abortion, and I think that's a better term, certain anti-abortion movements and certain anti-abortion activities. I have not done as much as I could.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, I guess I'll be held accountable for what I lacked, but I certainly won't be held accountable for the direct taking of human life by an abortionist.
Mm-hmm.
I've not become an abortionist. I'm not a clinic escorter. I'm not someone who gives money to Planned Parenthood or something like that. So there's two accountabilities here. In a certain sense, did we do positively evil? Were we the Clinton liberal Democrat type who tried to increase the number of abortions? Or were we indifferent, did nothing either way? Or were we anti-abortion, pro-life people, and how much did we do? There certainly seems to me to be some people in the pro-life movement who have literally devoted their entire lives to this. And even they, I'm sure, would tell you that they still take time off to watch a ball game and enjoy a soda and go to, you know, and
right.
have a barbecue. They don't spend their entire lives on this. And I tend to think, you know, that's one of the reasons Jesus became man, is to understand, not to understand human nature, but I think to give us the concept that he experienced life as we do, everything except sin. And again, he was described at various times as a party goer and a drunkard. He was having too good of a time at various different times.
Mm-hmm.
So I tend to be a little, shall I say, soft on this. I tend to think that God expects us to do good, avoid evil, and then relax a little bit.
Let me ask you about this, Vin. Some of our Protestant friends out there, especially I can think of a friend I have of the Baptist faith, they place a great deal of importance on not doing things like not smoking, not drinking, which they see as highly sinful, and also not swearing. Now, by swearing, I'm not talking about taking God's name in vain, because I sort of keep those in two distinct categories. How important is that in the big scope of things, and how's it going to weigh on Judgment Day?
Well, first of all, let me point out to you that your Baptist friends are utterly lying. They place no importance on it whatsoever. And what you're doing is you're confusing something, Pat. You're confusing what a person says with what he means.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we all know people lie, and Protestants lie more than others because they have to live a lie to be a Protestant. The point is simply this. Ask your Protestant friend the next time if he hears you say, you hit your thumb and you say Jesus or something like that, or you light up a cigarette, is this going to put me in hell? Well, no, friend, it isn't. All you got to do is accept Jesus in your heart. Okay, is this going to put me in purgatory? Pat, don't be foolish. There is no purgatory. Well, then, this has no importance whatsoever, because whatever doesn't keep me out of heaven cannot possibly have importance, can it, Baptist friend?
Well, let me ask you this.
Right.
Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Well, that's obviously a violation. Is that a serious mortal sin? Is that something that will keep me out of hell?
It would keep me out of heaven.
So, yeah.
It would keep you out of heaven if it's done consciously. Of course, it's a serious thing. But then again, there was an old Catholic habit which a lot of us were taught, who were raised by what appeared to be the real nuns in the old days. And what they said was use what Catholics call an ejaculation. Instead of saying, blankety blank, I hit my thumb, say something like the Irish used to do, saints preserve us. Make it into an act of praise for God. In my own life, I've done this. Usually, I sound like a Protestant a lot, but now when I get angry or something happens, I say, oh, Jesus be praised.
We used to have there was a sister down at a local Catholic high school here, Sister DePaul, and she used to have some type of anti-profanity league, and every day kids would get the opportunity to come up and stand before the class and come up with some smart aleck response to use instead of actually swearing when something came up like that. And I remember a friend of mine, Jim Borway, had a beauty. It was cheese and crackers. Cheese and crackers.
Sure. But to answer your question, Yes. It definitely will put you in hell if, again, you're doing it not because you just hit your thumb.
Uh-huh. Okay?
But you stand there, the anger builds up, and then you say something like, blankety blank. You know, you take the lane of one and go, blah, 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 blah. Of course, because you see, again, the reason the Bible is written the way it is because of the divine plan.
Mm-hmm.
It is our job to understand the divine plan. And there is an order in the Bible which gives indications of importance.
Mm-hmm.
The first commandment, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Well, the Jews had a Hebrew word for God, but certainly one of the names for God, a totally legitimate name, the name of the second person of the Blessed Trinity who became man and walked on the earth and rose from the dead, is Jesus,
mm-hmm.
the Christ. If we take that name in vain, if we're using it incorrectly, we are breaking the first commandment. And if we're doing it with a clear conscience, then by clear conscience, I mean you know what you're doing. And
you know that it's wrong.
You know that it's wrong. Then what you are doing is, of course, you're putting yourself in a horrible situation. You are committing a mortal sin because the sins that are directed against God are far worse than those that are directed only against man. Most sins of abortion, in my opinion, are only those directed against man. The mother who kills her child is annoyed at the existence of the child. But she isn't doing this only to kill, to attack God.
Mm-hmm.
But the using God's name in vain only is an attack against God.
Mm-hmm.
The movie and the play Amadeus had this whole concept of the major character in there, Salieri. The reason he attacks Mozart is not because he dislikes Mozart, but because he's at war with God and he wants to destroy one of God's creatures. The play is much better than the movie. I recommend anybody who ever gets a chance to see it. But the whole concept there, he's almost in a certain sense purely satanically evil. I think, abortion will put you in hell, but the point is, a far worse sin is blasphemy, and you talked about skewed priorities.
Right.
Exactly the point. We tend to ignore this blasphemy that goes on almost all the time,
mm-hmm.
without even saying to people, gee, you shouldn't use the name of the Lord in vain, or, you know, please don't do it in my presence, or couldn't you think of something else? You know, we might pick it outside an abortion clinic, but we don't do those other things.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have a skewed priority. I sometimes call that the real price of abortion. Mm-hmm. It makes us focus on the wrong thing. And it doesn't mean to say that abortion isn't a horror, but there's many more horrors that are going on and many worse things, and we have this horrible, and I mean it in the true sense of the word, a horrible tendency as Catholics to link ourselves with pro-life Protestants and say, well, they're close to us. They're not bad. Look at
mm-hmm.
that. They're not contracepting. Mm-hmm. Or, look, they're raising their family correctly. They study the Bible. Right. But they're attacking the mother of God. Don't you understand? I'd rather have an abortionist on my side. I'd rather have a Catholic abortionist who goes to confession every week because he's got a chance because he knows he's wrong rather than the smug Baptist or Assembly of God type who thinks the Blessed Mother did not remain a virgin all of his life because he's attacking something purely divine and he's advocating something purely human existence.
Let me ask you to respond to this, I would say safely say that I am in the minority with this belief. There's a lot of Christians and especially a lot of Catholics that you see them when they go to church on Sunday and they're all lovey-dovey and a lot of them have been misled to believe that as long as you go to church, as long as you don't commit any real serious sins, we're all going to go to heaven. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, that very few people are going to go directly to heaven, that many of us are going to be lucky if we wind up in purgatory, and a lot more are going to be surprised when they wind up in hell. Your response?
I have a very good friend of mine, and this issue comes up almost every time I visit him. He's a very profound man and a very great sense of humor and sort of a mystic. And he says the reading he's come up with is the largest number he's ever gotten from a saint who's commented on this is 20% of faithful Catholics go to heaven. Everybody else goes to hell. I think it was a St. John Chrysostom situation who lived in the Byzantine area, and I can't remember the century, but I think it was about the 4th or 5th or 6th, and I think there was like a massive earthquake and 10,000 people died.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked, the people came and says, well, you know, could you tell us, did you have an insight into the saved? And he says, yes. Two made it to purgatory, one made it directly to heaven, everybody else went to hell.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in a time when the faith was very strong. I believe you're perfect.
Not a very comforting figure. You're
no, but again,
one in five are being saved.
I would say again. My speculation is, and I hope I'm wrong, but I would say about 1 out of 100, maybe 1 out of 50. And what I'm talking about there is Catholics. I'm not talking about non-Catholics who have no chance at all, of course. Okay. I'm talking about, it's impossible, you're correct. These, and I have to be careful about this, and I wrote it down when you said the word, misled. See, that's what I think you're wrong on your basic premise. Nobody can be misled on religious matters unless they're willing to be misled, in which case they're not being misled, they're consciously going along.
Vin, let's pause on that note. I've got to get a few commercials in. It'd probably be a nice time to throw a little disclaimer in here as well. I know Chris Haggerty would want that. The opinions being expressed today are that of Vin Lewis, and not necessarily those of the talk show host here, or more importantly, the management of this station. We'll be back right after this brief commercial message. Talking today with Vin Lewis, the publisher of Armament and the head of All Roads Ministry. He bills himself as a Catholic who can defend any Catholic position from the Bible. Vin, we've had some very patient callers waiting. Let's go right to the phone. Good morning. You're on Flagship. Do you have a question for Vin?
Basic and a question.
Go right ahead.
I believe that when a young woman aborts her child, she is headed for hell unless she repents. But I also believe that some of these women are forced into this by their parents, their husbands, and their boyfriends. And I also believe that these people that forced her into this and the doctor that performed it are also heading to hell. Are you in line with the same belief?
Yes, except I would put the word forced around quotes. Everybody has enough grace to always resist temptation. Everybody has enough grace to do what is right and wrong. But the boyfriend who advocates it, the doctor, the parents who drive them there and pay for it, they are also doing the wrong thing, of course.
And one question. Annulment. I want you to talk about annulment.
Okay,
good question. Thanks a lot.
There's a big bit of confusion with Protestants because they always think that an annulment is a Catholic divorce. Mm-hmm. An annulment is simply a declaration by a church tribunal, which usually means a group of officials, that determines that the proper conditions for a Catholic marriage did not take place.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple example. If I were to marry someone tomorrow and then run away off to Ogden, Utah, and then meet a young lady and, quote-unquote, marry her, and I use a false name, well, they would run a check through the Bureau of Vital Statistics, say, well, you're never married, it's all right, and I would go through maybe a religious or a civil ceremony. This woman would think that I was married to her, but in fact, I wouldn't. Every now and then on these talk shows, you see these things. These guys get up, we'll have seven wives in seven different cities. Well, they don't have seven wives. They only have one wife. The others are just victims, unfortunately.
Right.
So an annulment is simply a statement that a marriage never took place.
By the same token,
yeah. Ben,
wouldn't you agree that currently in many dioceses throughout the country, that annulment procedure is being gravely abused, and that many places are turning into annulment mills, and that annulments are becoming synonymous with Catholic divorces?
No, and I'm glad you brought it up, Pat, because that was my next point. As a matter of fact, I take what I consider an extremely liberal view on this. I'm conservative on everything else. Of course, none of us can tell for sure, because the people who go in front of these tribunals, they very well lie in their testimony. But my feeling, and I'll emphasize this, my feeling and my judgment are the following. So few Catholics take marriage seriously these days that in the last 20 years, the vast majority of Catholics who have gone into marriage have not gone into it under the conditions laid down by Christ for his church. They have not gone into it with the concept that it's there to procreate and raise children, that it's forever, and that it's a contract. They've gone into it with a, let's give it a shot and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So my view is, because of the general breakdown in Catholicism, period, and the low moral quality of people who call themselves Catholics, I would say, just an arbitrary guess, probably 30% of the marriages performed are actually marriages. The others never took place. So I'm not shocked at all by the large number of annulments. As a matter of fact, my tendency is to believe that they're probably quite a valid representation of what's really going on.
All right, let's take another call. Good morning. You're on Flagship 1330. Another call.
And to hear the answer to that call, I'm afraid we'll have to turn over to side two. Please do so at this time, and the recording will continue. Thank you.
Pat says that there have been 300,000 babies killed in the womb.
No, I said there have been 30 million killed since 1970.
Actually, yes, again, it's about abortion. Now, Pat says that there have been 300,000 babies killed in the womb.
No, I said there have been 30 million killed since 1972-73.
30 million, okay.
In the U.S. 4,500 per day.
Yeah, okay. Now, I have a slight problem with that. Now, obviously, both of you are pro-lifers, and I respect that, but it seems like 10 years ago, we were more concerned about the overflowing of the Earth's population. I mean, well, what is it you want? Do you want a stable population or just a growing population?
Me personally?
Either of you.
Oh, well, of course I want a growing population. God is a God of life. The more people there are, the more good can be done, the more souls can be saved. That's exactly what we're here for, is to reproduce, populate heaven, put people on earth who will praise God, who will do good things, and will bring about the amount of good. There is, first of all, the population growth concept is a complete and utter myth. If you will examine the places where people are starving in this world, it is always because of political intervention which uses starvation as a weapon, or, and this is very frequent, underpopulation, not enough people to work the farms. There are no places in this world where starvation takes place because there are too many people. None, zero, anywhere. And the point is, that's just a fact that people bring up, and they're lying about it. They all know they're lying about it if they bother to find out, and if they don't bother to find out, they're not worthy of consideration because they're not taking a serious issue. But the point is this, if you believe in God, and I do, then there isn't a possibility that anybody's going to starve unless it's the will of God or the direct activity of another man to bring that person's death about. God will provide. I mean, what does Jesus say? Don't worry. I know what you need. The Father in heaven knows what you need and will provide. I would simply point out to you that this works. This always works. If you put yourself on God, if you do like I did about 5-6 years ago when I got fired from the state police, was branded as a crooked cop and couldn't get a job, I went out on the porch in front of my trailer and I said, Lord, I've been looking for a job for about 6-7 months. I've been fired the day after I was hired numerous times because the state police called and blackballed me. You take care of me, Lord. You take care of me. I'm not slothful in this, but I'm going to take your promises seriously. And since then, I've lived better than I've ever lived before, and I made $1,100 last year. I still don't understand it. How could I possibly live on $1,100? But I'm living fine. I'm living better than when I made $35,000 as a state policeman.
Vin, let's pause on that note. Caller, I thank you for your call. We're going to take a break here and go to the newsroom with Dean Soliday. We'll be back with more from Vin Lewis. If you'd like to get involved, it's we're back with Vin Lewis, I hope. Hello, Vin.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We're back again, Pat.
There we go. I threw in our installment of Media Monitor so that we could cover while we got you back on the air. Before we go back to the phone lines, we've got a number of callers waiting there patiently. I wanted you to share with our listeners your thoughts concerning Rush Limbaugh that you expressed in the July issue of Armament.
Well, once again, I write those things in advance, so I'm not sure what I said, but I know what I feel, and I can say my judgment on him. He truly is, as he claims, the most dangerous man in America, but he's dangerous because he advocates pure evil. If we look at the words of Scripture and we look at the words of Jesus, we don't find a single word on abortion, and we all know that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
We don't find a single word on contraception. We all know that's wrong. We find very little of other issues. We certainly find words on blasphemy. But one thing we find Jesus denouncing endlessly is greed, 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 riches, possessions. Rush Limbaugh is the most anti-Christian person in the United States. He advocates the pure lust for property, for greed, for money, for selfishness. And this is a horror. This is a true horror. And it's, once again, those people who are being misled by him, that thinking he's a moral person, are consciously being misled. They are culpably being misled. They're following the Pied Piper or the Siren Song to their own destruction. Once again, let's get this straight. This is a guy of family values who's been, quote-unquote, married 3 times. No, he's a constant adulterer, if he can actually engage in such things. Who knows, considering his circumstances. But the point is, one of the things I find very interesting also about Rush Limbaugh is, and this is the arm technique, always look for the self-contradiction, and then you know you're dealing with a fraud, a conscious fraud. Rush points out that the feminist movement, although it never officially says it, we all know they're implying that housewives are stupid and idiotic and suppressed and not really fulfilling themselves. Now, that's a fact. We all know that. The feminist movement does it, even though you'll never find that in any official literature. By the same token, everybody calls up Rush and says, Rush, you know, you really aren't a racist. You really don't like black people. You really are a white supremacist. And he said, give me an example. Well, there aren't any, but there seems to be tones. Oh, well, we can't judge by tones. But yet, if you do judge, exactly when he judges his enemies, it's everybody knows what they really mean. But when his enemies attack him, he wants the very specifics. He uses two standards. And remember, Jesus says, the standards by which we judge others are those by which we will be judged.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about another problem before we go back to the phone lines here. And it has to do with the dilemma that all people are faced with in this country, especially those who are anti-abortion or pro-life, regarding which one you, regardless of which one you prefer. And that is, here in the state of Pennsylvania, we've got a real dilemma. The gubernatorial race that's taking place in November. We've got two candidates, one from the Republican Party, one from the Democrat. Both are pro-choice. Now, there are going to be some independent candidates that are running, if not solely on the pro-life platform, maybe with one other issue, Peg Luxick here, also with OBE. What is a good Christian, what is a good Catholic to do at election time?
We sort of have a luxury in New York State because we have a Right to Life party which runs just on that issue alone.
Mm-hmm.
Just as an aside, the last time I tried to vote for George Bush, I voted for him on the Right to Life party, otherwise I never would have. And when I went into the voting booth, we use machines in New York, I couldn't merge the levers. They would not go down on the Right to Life party. When I brought this to the inspector's view, she said, isn't that interesting? We never should have let those men behind that machine after they got these things delivered. Someone came and actually doctored the machine so you could not vote Right to Life, at least in my voting district. I just thought that was an interesting point.
What about all the politics?
But let me answer your question, Pat. If there is no one you can vote for in a good conscience, what I suggest people do is go there. Again, I don't know how it works in Pennsylvania, but in New York, as soon as you enter that voting booth, you pull a lever, and that registers one person there.
Mm-hmm.
Then what you do is vote nothing, switch the lever back, mm-hmm. and walk away. And what that does is register a person who cared enough to come there. It wasn't that you were indifferent,
mm-hmm.
but said, none of you people meet me. This is the none-of-the-above type vote. And my view is that the Catholic, and again, even those quote-unquote pro-life Christians who agree with us on this issue, and God bless them for agreeing with us on this issue, if there is no choice, an interesting expression, they should go and register a protest vote or write in something.
In your opinion, is it sinful to vote for a pro-choice candidate, especially when that candidate is himself a Catholic?
Yes. I think it's sinful, but then again, I would say, everything else being equal, yes, it's sinful, okay?
Why hasn't the church stood up and taken a strong stand with regard to politicians that are so-called pro-choice? Up in your state, you have Governor Cuomo. There is that sad excuse for a politician up in the state of Massachusetts, that drunken philanderer known as Ted Kennedy, who's an embarrassment to every Catholic out there. Why hasn't the church stood up and say, hey, if you're going to be pro-choice, you're out?
For the reason that
tax exempt status.
I'm sorry. For the reason that all the liberals should be ecstatic. We've had women priests for about two generations now. It may not say so on their driver's license and their birth certificates, but let's get it straight. These guys are women. When they put the collar on around their neck, it cut off the male hormones, and they haven't behaved like men in about the last 40 or 50 years.
Again,
so what do you expect? What do you expect from women but accommodation, overlooking, gentleness? Phony compassion. That's what women do. That's their job. They do it very well. The bishops are women. They behave like women very well.
Again, the views being expressed today are those of Vin Lewis and not necessarily the views of this host or the station management. Let's go back to the phone lines. Good morning. You're on Flagship. And good morning. You're on Flagship 1330. Yeah, apparently they didn't want to stick around. I've got a number of other questions I want you to address. You had some rather scathing comments regarding Pat Buchanan and Joseph Sobran. For those who don't know, those are two nationally syndicated columnists who are also the Catholics. Your thoughts on those two gentlemen?
Let's put quotes around those words. They're formal Catholics. Whether they really are or not is up to question because, again, to be a proper Catholic, you have to agree with me on virtually everything.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't Mr. Buchanan also a knight of the Roman Catholic Church, which is the highest honor that can be bestowed upon a layperson?
There are different orders which are given, and they're given primarily to publicity hounds who can get their name in the paper and therefore make the publicity hound in Rome. who is the current pope, look good. So let's get that straight, sure. Whether they earn it or not, who knows? It's the same thing as commencement speakers at colleges. You get big names, nobody pays attention, you give them $5,000, mm-hmm. walks away. It's one of those formalities of 20th century life.
Okay.
A knight in the old day was actually someone who defended chivalry, was willing to lay down his life for the faith and justice, and actually went out there and did things, mm-hmm. and many of them died nobly.
Yeah.
And they don't sit in air-conditioned offices with thick carpets and never, you know, have a callus on their hands.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think happens with both Buchanan and Sobrin. And I have to be clear, I think they say many good things, but the thing I tore them apart on in the most recent armament, I think this is the one you're referring to, was there reasonable attack on the nomination of Judge Breyer to the Supreme Court.
Right.
I know what they would say. I mean, I wrote this before the confirmation hearings came up. They'll say, well, Judge Breyer is not going to follow the Constitution, and he won't find constitutional reasons to overturn Roe versus Wade, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. And what I said was, is this is utter nonsense. What these men are worshiping is a sheet of paper.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, sometimes we sort of criticize the Jew for making too much of the Torah and carrying it around and kissing it and making it almost idolatrous. But at least those are the words of God. And at least they make an effort to reproduce the words of God correctly.
Mm-hmm.
What the Constitution is nothing but a piece of paper that a bunch of Freemason, anti-Catholic, anti-Christian people wrote on a piece of paper. And it is, in many ways, one of the most evil documents that's ever been produced by men. It intentionally is used to advocate evil, to bring about injustice, to bring about horrors, and we have guys who are calling themselves Catholics saying, let's follow this. What you follow is God. What you follow, therefore, is the Church. And what you do is right. You avoid evil and combat it.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are arguing if there's not a law against something written by hateful men who like abortion or the Freemasons who founded this country, if they don't put something in writing, well, I'm afraid we have to ignore the situation. I think Buchanan and Sobrin would actually say, if a legal case could be made for Roe versus Wade, now it can't, but if a legal case could be made, well, I guess we just have to accept it. All of a sudden, that becomes right. I debated once a guy in Planned Parenthood on a radio station, and I asked him a very simple question, because he was attacking my side for being lawbreakers. And I said, of course we're lawbreakers. You know, the law is no good, so we just ignore it. And he said, what kind of an attitude is that? And I said, a totally Christian one. I said, let me ask you a question. If tomorrow the Supreme Court decreed that an act of Congress was valid that says you must deliver your grandmother to the Phil Donahue show, where she'd be tortured to death on public TV, would you obey it? Of course, you wouldn't answer the question.
Mm-hmm.
Because the point is, I said, I just want to see how much of a Nazi you were and how much of a communist you were. Okay, if you worship the state, you're not going to go to heaven. And these guys worship the state.
Right.
It's just a different state than the one that's in power right now.
Uh-huh.
But again, the principles we are to follow are the natural law in our heart, the revealed word of God, and whether the laws on a piece of paper accord with that or not, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Makes no difference. And these guys are worshiping a piece of paper and saying, well, you know, and again, one of the quotes from Breyer, which I heard, not that he meant it, but it was a very good principled quote. He said he believes laws exist to do good for people, and that's what he's going to try to do on the Supreme Court. Now, of course, he's going to do evil on the Supreme Court, but those words are great. What you should say is, do we want judges to go on the Supreme Court and say, you know, I'd love to find in the case of this because it's justice, but unfortunately I can't because there's no law. There's an old quote from Oliver Wendell Holmes in which a young lawyer apparently was trying a case in front of him. And Oliver Wendell Holmes said to him, what are you asking for, young man? And he said, justice. And Oliver Wendell Holmes says, this is a court of law. Don't bring justice into it. It has no place. That's exactly the point. Once you write something on a piece of paper and then start interpreting it, justice goes out the window.
Okay.
Justice is what's in our heart. That's why the medieval concepts of justice were much better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they didn't have prescribed punishments. They judged each case individually, and they might execute you for a crime that today we would totally never execute someone for, and they might let you go for something today we would execute. Why? Because they took all those things into account.
Vin, let me get a few quick commercial
sure.
breaks in here. When we come back, we'll get right to the phones. We've got some patient callers waiting, and I found out that I failed to turn the correct button on last time, so I probably knocked a few people off. We'll be back right after this.
The Right Way with Pat Campbell.
Welcome back to the program. Again, continuing our discussion this morning with Vin Lewis, the publisher of Armament Magazine or newsletter, and also the head of the All Roads Ministry. He bills himself as the Catholic who can defend any Catholic position from the Bible. And we're going to go right to the phones. Good morning. You're on Flagship.
Good morning, Vin. I have yet to hear you say anything with which I might disagree.
Good for you. You're on your way to heaven.
Great. So I can only ask you to elaborate on a position stated earlier. You know, we all know Rush Limbaugh's obviously a man of excess, a man of great greed. But could you give us sort of a mean income, a general idea about when you might say a person is becoming greedy and a person is just bringing home a just and fair amount for his
labor? No, it's an excellent question, and I always use this analogy. If I were hired by somebody to sell Mercedes-Benz, which have a huge markup, my job is to make as much money as I possibly can because that's my job. That's my contract with my employer, and that's my state of life. How much money you make is completely irrelevant. It's how much you keep. The point is, if you're a very wealthy Catholic, you can still be saved as long as you don't keep that money. Now, I'm not saying you can't live a good life and take vacations and stuff like that, but what I'm saying is you better be filtering through your hands and going to poor people. And what I'm saying is if Rush Limbaugh were saying, hey, you know what, 50% of the income from my books went to those people who were washed out in that flood of the Mississippi, and that's the way conservative Republicans should do things, is by the individual way, and made a big deal of it, and asked other people to match those funds, then he'd be right, okay? Then I'd say, okay, you keep that 50% because you're using that, your channel for that money to do good. So you can make as much money as you possibly can, and if you're honest, you should, because one of your jobs as an employee, or even as an employer, is to function as a prophet. I dealt recently with a guy who had a little bit of guilt about a magazine he was running. He didn't think he was doing it right. And I said, how many people do you employ? And he said, 30. And I said, could they get a job somewhere else? Well, yeah. Is it about economic times? I said, yeah. I said, why don't you look at the fact that you're supplying employment to 30 people who otherwise wouldn't have it in a compassionate fashion? You care about these people. God bless you for doing something good. I could see his eyes light up. He never thought of it that way, see? And he was a compassionate man, but he had this sort of like an internal conflict. So I can't put a number on it. You can be a wealthy man. Again, there's been saints in the Catholic Church who were kings, obviously very wealthy. But do you get attached to the money? You know, and again, people should save, quote, for a rainy day. That's a prudent thing. You should certainly take out insurance. And there's nothing wrong if you can afford it, having a better car than your neighbors. That's all right. But the point is, how much are you doing for pure greed? Again, a very quick example. I used this before. My ex-Catholic friend who took me on the fishing trip is now a Presbyterian. And we went to a restaurant in which the prices, we were in exactly one of these resort towns when there was a Paul Simon concert going on. Prices had to be like four times normal. And we're paying $20 for a piece of chicken. And I'm saying, I could never do this. If I had $1 million, I could never do this because this is wasteful. And my friend orders a steak, eats half up, and throws the rest out. That's wasteful. Now, I'm sorry. Did that answer your question?
No, not really.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It sounds to me as if you would say that someone is getting a dispensation just because they're not keeping the money. But you know, take General Electric, for example. You know, you're working for a company where your labor is indirectly supporting the greed of a great many executives who are unjustly taking home hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Wait a minute. They're not unjustly taking it home. They may be unjustly keeping it. If it's done openly and people, the stockholders, know what's going on, there's nothing unjust about that.
Well, the question, I guess, then is this. Is it proper or just to work for a sinner when your labor benefits?
Here's the classic economic phrase, all other things being equal, no. Or all other things equal, they never are. Okay? So, in other words, if you are an air conditioning repairman, and you live in a town that has only one service, you have to work for this guy. Otherwise, you're going to let your children starve. Then you have to work for that guy regardless of his morality. However, if there happen to be two of them, and one's good and one's bad, then you have the obligation to work for the good one, even at less money. See, the reality of the world is we don't get a chance to pick and choose these things. If we do get a chance to pick and choose, then morality always has to be a factor.
What do you do if you know both individuals are of low moral character?
Well, again, if you're single like I am, you can rely on God and expect the money to come miraculously. But if you're not, if you're married, you have to provide for your family. You're an instrument of God for bringing about the health and the welfare of your family. Mm-hmm. You must labor in an honorable profession and do it in an honorable way. Now, if the bosses up at top are dishonorable, that you can't control that. The only thing you could possibly do is maybe, you know, as they say, bear witness to them and maybe try to evangelize them a little bit, but that's the way you can do. You have to work in the world that you're presented with. And again, you know, people say, well, couldn't you pack up and move? Yeah, but moving costs money. Where do you get it from? And what is your guarantee you're going to get the profession in Kansas that you were not going to, you know, that you couldn't find in New York? So you have to do the best what you can. There are times, again, I use this analogy all the time, there are times when we overlook evil for matters of prudence. The priest who is hurrying on his way to a deathbed to give the last rites of the church walks by the pornographic theater and doesn't say a thing. Does that mean he approves of it? No, he's got something better to do, okay? And again, the policeman who, or the ambulance driver who is rushing to an emergency situation drives recklessly because he's trying to get there as quickly as possible because the human life is involved. Okay, we understand that. He shouldn't drive that way normally. There are, again, the thing comes down to, what is your intent? If your intent is to bring about more wealth and unjust, as you called it, quote-unquote, unjust greed for the corporate people of General Electric, then you're doing something wrong. But if your goal is to provide a living for your family, a roof over their head, food on their table, clothes on their back, if that's your goal, and it's also to earn money so that you can give to other poor people, that's perfectly legitimate. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, thanks.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Vin, one of the other questions we have faxed here I want you to respond to. It says, years ago I ate meat on Friday when it was a sin. I never confessed that sin to a priest. Am I going to hell when I die?
Again, I can give an abstract answer. I can't get into his soul. If he ate meat with the clear intention of defying God, which makes it a mortal sin, then yes, it's a mortal sin, and yes, if he doesn't confess it before, well, doesn't confess it or have it removed in another way before he's judged, yeah, he's going to go to hell.
What about the fact that...
The point is, if he ate it accidentally, which I remember myself doing once, you know, I was in those days too, and I don't eat meat on Friday today, by the way, because I still think it's applicable, but the point is, I remember once just grabbing a chunk of bologna out of the refrigerator and gobbling it down, and, my gosh, it's Friday, yeah. Big deal, I forgot, doesn't mean anything.
Let me say he met all the qualifications, okay?
Yeah,
I was always taught
yeah.
that even if that was a mortal sin, and he met all the qualifications, and he somehow forgot it when he went to confession, it was still forgiven. However, if years later he recalled it,
he's got to go back and say it.
He should make a right when he goes to confession.
Of
course,
very simple analogy. I think the Alcoholics Anonymous used.
Quick, we got 30 seconds before the news.
You have to make reparation for the evil you've done.
Okay, fair enough. We're going to put you on hold. When we come back, an additional half hour of Vin Lewis. You get involved by picking up the phone and dialing 835-1330. Cellular One user *1330 faxes at 835-8395. And we also want to talk about what Vin considers blasphemies, altar girls, female lectors, Eucharistic ministers, and communion in the hand. We'll be back on the other side of the news with more from Vin Lewis. Don't forget, 11:30. Pat Campbell and Vin Lewis are joining us by phone for an additional half hour. As always, we encourage your participation here at 835-1330. Cellular One users, *1330, faxes at 835-8395. Don't forget, coming up at 11:30 today, we're going to be joined by Dale Ella from Glenwood Fire and Security for this, a Thursday edition of Service Line. Vin, before I forget, before we go any further with questions, I want to allow you the opportunity to give out your address, your phone number for people that want more information, want to find out more about your organization. The All Roads Ministry or the publication Armament?
You can reach me at ARM55PALEN, that's P as in perfection, ALEN, Road, number 38, Hopewell, which is what all Christians should do, Junction, as where things come together, New York, 12533. And you can call me at 914-226-4172. Again, that's 914-226-4172. I'm listed in the phone book if people forget it. Hopewell Junction, Vin Lewis. The only thing I would suggest, though, is I got a couple of letters last time from people. It is very, very, very difficult for me to respond to letters. I'm overwhelmed with that. Not right. Call. It takes me about 5 minutes to clear up something on the phone. It'll take me 12 pages in a letter. So if you write me a letter, I'm probably not going to respond. But please call. And I'll take calls up to 11 o'clock at night.
By the way, I ran into your friend Kurt, and I told him that you were eagerly awaiting his return call.
Kurt called me last night.
Did he really? Good,
yeah.
Good. That's good to hear. A number of things I want to address before going back to the phones. And again, if you want to get involved, it's 835-1330.
We are talking today with Vin Lewis, the Catholic who can defend any Catholic position from the Bible. Before we went to the news break, Vin, I talked about what you consider to be some blasphemies, and I would have to agree with you on some of these as well. Altar girls, female lectors, Eucharistic ministers, communion in the hand. Let's start with altar girls.
Okay, again, as we went over on the last show, it's very simple. You don't offer to God second best when first best is available. Women are inferior to men. I went over this at some length last time when I was there, but I'd like to get just another approach.
All right.
If tomorrow somehow some virus wiped out all the women on earth overnight, we would lose one of the seven sacraments, marriage. If a virus wiped out all the men overnight, we would lose six of the seven sacraments. The only one we could keep is baptism. Therefore, since sacraments are necessary for the salvation of man, they're the outward sign instituted by Christ to give grace, to enlighten people, to bring about salvation of man. Obviously, if you need men to bring about and function in six of the seven sacraments, just simple mathematics would say we're six times more important than women. So why, in the name of God, are you putting females on the altar of God when there's men available?
Now, I would assume that that would apply also to female lectors and Eucharistic ministers.
Correct. Absolutely. Okay. They shouldn't be. The only woman who was worthy to touch the body of Christ was the Blessed Mother, and she was assumed into heaven about 1,900 years ago.
Now,
other
Eucharistic
women are not worthy of it.
Right. Eucharistic ministers, I believe, and I think you'll back me up on this, have been greatly abused here in the United States. They were set up originally as extraordinary ministers. However, any parish here in the United States, you can go on a Sunday and you will see literally an altar full of lay people up there ready to distribute communion.
I disagree with you. You can't abuse something that's evil in and of itself, okay?
All right.
That's like saying abortion's been abused. No, abortion is evil. Eucharistic ministers could only function validly, in my opinion, under one circumstance. Like happened in New York not so long ago. Crane fell over, pinned a woman underneath. A policeman was able to crawl under there and give her the Blessed Sacrament, the consolation of the body of Christ. Mm-hmm. I could see a case like that where you could use someone other than a priest. But that's the only case I could ever see anyone being somewhat other than a priest. After all, what is it? We've got to wait longer to receive the body of Christ? Well, good. Maybe less people will receive and take it more seriously when they do.
Mm-hmm. With regards to communion in the hand, your thoughts?
An utter horror. Again, we're not talking about some symbolic representation of someone. We're talking about the physical flesh of Jesus. And we, you know, think about this. I mean, again, God knew what he was doing when he set up this entire plan. The crucifixion required that Jesus be physically grabbed by sinful men, dirty, filthy, calloused hands, put upon a cross and nails driven into him. That's when people touched him impurely.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once again, we are touching him impurely with these same hands as if somehow we're worthy to carry in our hands the body of Christ. This is utter and complete nonsense. Mm-hmm. I personally would never receive Holy Communion except that Jesus tells me to because, as I say, it's only half jokingly, it's the only prayer I ever pray with sincerity. Oh, Lord, I am not worthy to receive you, but only say the word and my soul shall be healed. Mm-hmm. I'm not worthy. But it's he who says so, so I go by God's standards, not mine.
Let me share with you an argument I had received from a friend not too long ago, a friend of the Protestant faith. For those who aren't Catholic, who don't know what Catholics believe, supposedly, and you'll see why I'm using this word in a minute, Catholics believe in the true physical presence of Christ at the Mass under the forms of bread and wine, okay? A Protestant friend of mine said, Jesus is not present in your church. And he said, and I'll tell you exactly why. He said, because if he was really in your church, he said, you Catholics would not act the way you act. He says, you walk in, people don't genuflect anymore. They walk into church dressed like slobs. He said, I see people going up to communion that shouldn't be going up in the first place. How do you respond to that?
Two ways. One is sort of a defense and the other is sort of an agreement. As far as the agreement goes, I agree with him utterly. I have a sort of an internal quota that I correct or damn one person per week for misbehaving at Mass. And I suggest other people do that. Get a grown guy and say, don't wear shorts, don't wear sneakers. You know, this isn't a picnic. This is a sacrifice of Jesus to the Father for reparation of sins. He's physically present, bozo. Okay. The other one is this. In a real sense, though, because I know myself, even when I go to Eucharistic adoration in my own church and I'm there for an hour, my mind wanders, and I know in Mass sometimes my mind wanders, and then I say, well,
We're following apostolic example. After all, in the Garden of Gethsemane, the apostles fell asleep in the presence of Jesus when he said, "Can't you just pray with me?" So the point is, we're really seeing very apostolic about this. We treat Jesus, I think we're treating Jesus, we're the real believers in the incarnation, we treat him just like he's one of the family, our real brother. Sometimes we ignore him and fall asleep in his presence.
Now, some of the things that we mentioned, the altar girls, the lectors, the Eucharistic ministers, the communion in the hand, in one of the last issues of Armament, you laid down some ways to combat these blasphemies in your church, and you addressed two ways, an active and a passive way. Can you share some of those thoughts with the listeners?
Well, primarily the active concept is to try to get a discussion somewhere in a public forum, and the way you try to do that is to confront the priest on the idea that you're displeased with this. Now, liberal priests don't believe they're serving God. They claim they're serving the flock. So what you say to the priest is, "Do you believe that you're supposed to be in service to the flock, Father?" "Oh, yes." "Am I part of the flock?" "Yes." "Well, serve me." "Well, how?" "Get the girls off the altar." Well, then he'll say, "I can't just do that because other people would object." And you say, "Well, gee whiz, Father, can't we discuss this? Can we use the word like a dialogue? Can we have a dialogue about this?" Probably won't work, but at least you tried. The passive ways are to protest it in a certain way, and I've made some suggestions. One is, of course, you don't ever shake hands with anybody in church during Mass. You fold your arms. You make that clear. If the girls are on the altar, shut your eyes. You may kneel at the proper times, but not when everybody else is. You could either leave early, literally as an act of contempt for the priest, not for Jesus. Once the priest says the Mass is over, leave as an act of contempt for the priest, or you could leave much, much later in a group and foul up the parking lot, which, of course, is very important to Catholics, okay, that they all get out of the parking lot on time. And also, of course, you never give a cent. I don't think that anybody who calls himself a Catholic who's still giving to a parish which allows any woman on the altar at any time or allows communion in the hands is committing an act of stupidity, which, of course, will be held against him at his judgment time.
Catholics have a horrendous track record when it comes to tithing. In fact, they are the embarrassment of the Christian world. A lot of people out there, if they take nothing else away from your message today, will take the fact that Finn Lewis said, "Don't give to your church."
Now, there's two religious organizations that I can endorse, maybe two or three that I can endorse without qualification because they're doing real Catholic things. One is the St. Benedict Center, the one in New Hampshire. There are several.
Not to be confused with this band of extremists that we have out on East Lake Road known as the Benedictine Nuns.
Oh, yeah.
I want to clear that up.
Certainly not, okay? And my organization. There are others which do legitimate Catholic functions, but I think there's a matter of priority.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if there's a legitimate Catholic organization which is producing cassette tapes of the Rosary, that's not really needed today. You don't need a cassette tape of the Rosary to pray the Rosary, and although that would be really nice, that's icing on a cake if things were very good.
Mm-hmm.
What's really needed out there is apologetics and evangelism. I know my organization does it. I know theirs does it.
Let's take some quick calls here. Good morning. You're on Flagship 1330.
Good morning, Pat.
Good morning. You have a
good
question
morning, Mr. Lewis.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good. First off, let me start off by saying that that I'm one of those people that's definitely going to hell in your book. I am one of those dreaded atheists.
Okay.
However, I do have to commend you on your criticism as it pertained to Rush Limbaugh and the rest of the people who espouse to be of religious and moralistic faith and yet go around gobbling up wealth like little dots in the Pac-Man game.
Sure.
If you ever want to see a Christian shuck jive hem and haw, all you have to do is say something about fitting through the eye of a needle.
Exactly.
And you will see people run for cover and do whatever they can. My question for you today deals with the recent killing of the abortion doctor.
Yes.
You were a state policeman, you said?
Yes.
In your line of duty, did you ever have to take a human life?
No, fortunately.
No, but had the situation been called upon where a third party's life was in jeopardy and you had the opportunity to take a shot to kill the...
Yeah, I would have had no qualms. I would have done it immediately.
You would have had no qualms.
Right.
How do you parallel that to what happened this past week?
I think it was great. I hope that there's a lot of lunatics out there who will copycat it and go around killing abortionists like crazy.
And
it wasn't a justified act. It was a mandated act.
Okay. Well,
again, let me interject here and say the views today are those of Vin Lewis and not necessarily those of this host and or the station management. Thank you.
Once again, I have to commend you on your internal consistency. You certainly do have that aspect covered. I have no problems with any of your...
The only point I would make, though, Mr. Atheist, is because you don't understand the difference between Protestants and Catholics.
If a Catholic had done it, he would have shot the guy at night when he came out of his house and then run away. See, Protestants surrender, and that's why they're really sinful. They're incredibly imprudent. What this guy should have done is shot this guy from a distance, run away, and then kill a bunch more. Catholics would have done that. Catholics continue to do good. See, the Protestant, unfortunately, I think he wants a big name. He did a good act, and now he wants to go down as a martyr, and he's probably seeking self-glorification. Okay, that's all right. You knocked off two of them. But you really should have got like a dozen, and that's the real problem with this guy. That's why it's the old problem of sin confuses and clouds the intellect. This guy didn't think it through all the way.
You are a piece of work. I got to say, I love listening to you.
Thank you.
Why haven't you gone out and popped any yet?
I beg your pardon?
Why haven't you gone and popped any yet?
Well, first of all, I won't admit on the air whether I have or not. But secondly, fear of getting caught. If I could figure out a totally legit, a perfectly valid way to do it. You see, one of the problems was the only abortionist who lived in our area, we stared out and now we moved somewhere else. Because we used to pick in front of his house with the horrible signs and denounce him all the time. And he's gone. I don't know where the other ones live. And the abortion clinic that I know is really on a main street. To kill anybody going in there, you'd probably get caught.
That's kind of too bad.
And I don't have a gun anymore. You know, that's another problem.
I'm sorry?
And I don't have a gun anymore, and I don't have that O.J. Simpson facility with a knife.
I see. If the Vatican ever gets rid of the Swiss Guard and picks up a special forces unit, I think...
Ben Lewis, right there.
Well, there's a funny myth among the real anti-Catholic fringes that there's this secret organization of Catholics who are going to go around and kill Protestants when the Antichrist comes, and they've been recruiting, and I always keep saying, why haven't they recruited me? My gosh, you know? That's why I know it doesn't exist. I'd be the perfect guy. I'd love to be in that organization,
Hey, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
We appreciate it.
Hey, come into the church before you die. Go ahead.
Thank you. We appreciate the call. Vin, I'm going to take a short commercial break, and we'll get a few more calls in at 835-13 to the program. Vin, I've got three more calls I want to get in before the bottom of the hour.
Yeah.
Before we go to the phones, give out the address and the phone number one more time. Hey, Vin, will you come back again in the future, too?
Oh, sure. As long as the rapture doesn't occur first.
All right, to the phone lines. Good morning. You're on Flagship.
Good morning. I have a question.
Go right ahead.
I didn't hear the beginning of the show. Has this gentleman told his nationality?
You mean what's my descent?
Yes.
I'm half Irish of Welsh descent and half Sicilian.
Half Welsh of Irish descent and half
the other way around. We moved to Ireland like 1,000 years ago, but the Irish never fully accept us. They always think we're still Welsh. And the other half is Sicilian.
Sicilian?
Yes.
Oh, I
That makes me thick-headed and petty. It's a very interesting combination.
I had you pegged as Jewish.
No.
No?
I tell you. But we're all spiritual Semites, as Pope Paul VI said, and I agree with that perfectly. After all, my mother in heaven is Jewish, and you know how Jewish mothers are.
That's right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Back to the phone lines. Good morning. You're on Flagship.
Oh, great. Great show. Vince?
Yes.
You think on my lines, and then you refresh my, give me some stability in life. I've thought just like you, but I'm not that much educated in my life to express myself like you have.
You let God do it, and you can do it.
Oh,
you don't need the education.
I believe in everything that you've said. You
Thank
have
you.
Make amends for your past and try to do the best thing. I had a family member that died, and on a deathbed, was a very greedy person and says, all you want is my money. And I thought it was a very hell of a way to live.
Of course it is. Riches are horror. Riches are horror. You never even know who your friends are when you're rich.
A couple questions I want to ask you, and I'm going to make them real fast. Are you a person that condemns sinners, or you're out there to save souls?
Both.
Okay.
As I always say, let me give a quick example. They say it's better to light one candle and curse the darkness. Right, but let's curse the darkness too. Okay.
Yeah, well, I see it on the conservative side. Don't get her interrupted here, Pat.
No. Okay.
I see on the conservative side they like to talk about people, condemn people.
Yep.
But talking bad about people and condemning doesn't help them.
Sure it does.
It doesn't do a darn bit of good talking about your neighbor. It's still going to be your neighbor.
I want to interject, though. I am critical of the president's policies, not of him personally.
And, okay.
And that's,
all right.
That's something all right. That people don't pick up a lot of times.
Okay. Well, I'm critical of him personally.
Yeah. One question I want to get is, do you think President Clinton is a generous person?
No, he's a horror. He has no morality whatsoever. Anything he does as good as by pure accident.
Okay. That's all I wanted to ask you. Hey, the nice talk.
Hey, pro-abortion people no longer have a right to be considered moral in any category whatsoever. whatsoever, period. They're disqualified from being considered good people in any meaning of that word. End of discussion.
Okay. Hey, thank you.
Bye-bye. We appreciate it, and let's get another call in here. Good morning. You're on Flagship 1330. Do you have a question for Vin?
Hello. I'm a seminarian studying for the Catholic Diocese.
Yeah.
And I have two responses to make to some statements. First of all, you talked about communion in the hand.
Yes.
Are you aware that communion in the hand was a practice of the early church? Long before we started doing just communion on the tongue, we did both forms.
I've read the records of that, and I believe they're true. Yes.
Okay. And secondly, if you're not in favor of altar servers or female lectors, how do you explain Paul's letters where he talks about the roles of women in the early church?
He tells the roles of women in the early church to shut their mouths, keep quiet, and never speak in assembly and have no authority over man. All I'm doing is endorsing that. The women have a great role in the church. It's to serve man. It's to fix sandwiches, fix coffee, clean the altar, wash the priesthood vestments, arrange the flowers, and all that other stuff. That's what women are supposed to do. But they are never, 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 never to open their mouths or have any religious authority over man under any circumstances, period, infallibly declared forever by the living God who will judge you and me.
I think Paul's letters would disagree with that.
No, you're lying, or you don't know what you're talking about. Does Paul not say a woman must keep quiet in the assembly?
Yes, he says
right.
That.
So therefore, that ends the discussion forever, because that's the infallible word of God, the Holy Spirit inspiring a man by something you're supposed to live by. Hey, listen, you're going to become a priest. Become a real one. We have enough jerks running around there. Take the letters of Paul, St. Paul, inspired by the God who's going to judge you when you die, seriously. Stop calling yourself even a seminarian if you're not going to do that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Your call. We appreciate it.
All right, let's curse the darkness a bit here.
All right. Vin, you're making friends left and right.
Hey, listen, if I let him off the hook, what am I going to do and stand in my judgment myself? Jesus is going to say, I put that guy on the phone, Vin, so you would tell him to put him in the right way and divert him from the wrong, and you let him off the hook. You were kind and gentle with him when you shouldn't have been.
Back to the phones. Good morning.
In editing this tape, in order to get the tape on one 90-minute tape, I've eliminated the next question. The response will make it clear what the subject matter was.
And once a person takes the position of pro-abortion in any way whatsoever, he is then disqualified from any comment whatsoever on morality until he abandons that position. Hey, listen, I don't let my dog write my checkbook. You know, and that's exactly what we're talking about.
That's
it's
right.
Absurd to even think that. Once a person becomes pro-abortion, he no longer could comment on morality for the rest of his life until he abandons that position.
Yeah, I'd like to know who that guy thinks he is, man.
Wouldn't I?
Yeah.
Modern-day prophet who reflects God's teachings to bring truth to you so you may yet be saved.
More like a modern-day idiot.
Don't misunderstand me. Of course I sound like a modern-day idiot, because all prophets are always thought of as idiots, because remember what Jesus says, prophets are not dealt with in their own land. And remember, at the time, according to the scriptures, they thought Jesus was possessed by an evil spirit. All you're doing is accusing me of being Christ-like. I take the compliment. Thank
well,
you.
I'll tell you what. I've
yeah.
never heard a person talk about stuff and come off as knowing absolutely nothing.
Well, if you've never heard it, I don't know why you're bringing up what has not happened in past history. Do you have a comment or a question directed to me?
Yeah, what kind of authority do you have? I was listening to you off and on. And I was taken aback how you like to denigrate women, and you your views are so it turns people off to religion. You're the type of person that has turned good people off to religion and to getting involved with
utter nonsense. You can't turn good people off to religion, number one, because God can call them beyond me. Even if I'm a defect, I can't possibly drive anybody away if God is calling them. Number two, if you read the sixth chapter of the Gospel of St. John, you see where it says in the later part of it, and many left him at this point. Jesus essentially went to the cross by himself. People turned away from him, and he said the world will hate you. So once again, you're accusing me of being Christ-like and Jesus imitator. Thank you very much. If I turn people off, it's only a sign that I'm presenting to them exactly what they don't want to hear. Almost all of the prophets were killed by the Jews of the Old Testament, and they were the chosen people of God who were prepared for the message. Of course I turn people off. I hope I turn people off. I'm the doctor who's setting the bone that's broken. It's going to cause you pain. People are going the wrong way. It's my job to try to stop them. Definitely. There's no two ways about it. Pain, growth comes from pain, improvement comes from pain. Look at the message of Jesus, the first message in the Gospel of St. Mark, repent, reform, the kingdom of God is at hand, which means what? You people are going the wrong way. And that's exactly what turned the Jews off of the day. They didn't want to hear repent and reform, neither do people they. That's essentially my message. You people are wrong, I'm right, do what I say.
Vin, as always, you have been an exciting guest to have on the program. I am sure there are literally thousands of mouths around Erie, Pennsylvania, just hanging open as we speak.
Can't understand why.
I want to invite you back in the future. It's been a pleasure having you on today. Give the phone number one more time.
Again, phone 14-226-4172. And, Pat, all I can say is may God give you the indulgences you deserve for having me on, and God bless you, and I really appreciate your efforts.
Thanks a lot, Vin. Have a great day. We're going to be going to the newsroom. We're going to be joining...